Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Liam and Noel Gallagher are to reunite for the long-awaited reunion of Oasis with a worldwide tour next year. They'll play gigs in Cardiff, Manchester, London, Edinburgh, and Dublin, and tickets go on sale on Saturday. The Prime Minister will today warn things will get worse before they get better, as he vows to get a grip on the UK's problems. Sir Keir Starmer will deliver a major speech in the Downing Street Garden. The International Fund for Animal Welfare says not nearly enough is being done to tackle wildlife crime in the UK. Matt Collis from the charity says these crimes have far-reaching effects on the environment.
The wildlife we're talking about, particularly in terms of wildlife trafficking and smuggling, these are highly endangered species. They're critically important for the ecosystems they live in.
And the boss of Waitrose says consumers are buying more brands and treats amid early signs that confidence is improving. From Radio News Hub, I'm Edward Breslin.
Wouldn't it be nice if everything went together like strawberries and cream? Buckets and spades. Fish and chips. Or the amazing iPhone 15 and Sky Mobile. You can experience the perfect combination of iPhone 15 and Sky Mobile for an incredible £23 a month. Sky Mobile, the UK's fastest growing network. Subject to status based on swap 24 plan. Device on 36-month interest-free loan. Excludes data plan. Verify at sky.com/mobile.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
I hope you've got your ID because it's time to vote for me. The options are me, me, and me. And if you fail to vote, then you get nothing. As in, we cut off the broadcast to your home and all your devices. This is how our votes work. Actually, no, here's what you can do. You can vote for me or Steve Quirk. So that means you vote for me. That's Colourful Drive, every weekday from 4 till 7, with myself, the Mixmaster Mac. Make sure you vote for me, by the way. Every weekday, make sure.
On Colourful Radio.
Oh yeah, make sure you bring your ID.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colourful.com, and apps. This is Colourful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Colourful.
Colourful.
Genius.
Colourful Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you're connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus, and I'm your host, Julius Valuto. We're coming to you, of course, all the way from the heart of London to wherever you are. And this is on Colourful Radio, so keep it colourful. And let us all be colorful. Welcome to the show. Today is a great day. We are honored. And I'll be hosting Dr. Pauline Long. And we will chat about oncoming BAFTA. Who knows BAFTA? I'm sure you guys do. If you don't, pay attention. We'll share a bit about that. And of course, in the second place, we are flying out all the way to Kenya to catch up with the going-ons there. So stay tuned and join us. Dr. Pauline, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Julius. Thank you. It's always an honor.
Today, because I've introduced you innumerable times, today I'm going to give you the chance to introduce you yourself, but on condition that you do it better than I do.
You know, that's quite interesting. It's very difficult to introduce myself, especially knowing all the things that I do. You know me from back then. You know, I don't want to say how many years, because that will reveal our ages. But, you know,
yep.
We've come a long, long way. Of course, you knew me when I was organizing the Mr. and Miss East Africa UK, representing over 13 East African countries. So we go way, way back then, and then through to BAFTA, and then through to the Pauline Long Show, and then through to, you know, my film studios, the foundation, and me mentoring so many people, and getting involved with the diaspora community in regards to, you know, I wouldn't say activism, but being a voice to so many, not just Africans, but, you know, I spread all the way to, you know, Latin America, Europe, of course, our continent, and pretty much different parts of the world. So how some people would introduce me is, you know, Professor Pauline Long, Her Excellency Ambassador, is a serial philanthropist, serial entrepreneur, a mentor to many, and a sister to many, and a mother to many. But most importantly, now that you mentioned that we are going to talk about Kenya soon, most importantly, also the lady that's eyeing that top seat to become president of Kenya. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And that's why also you leave me bragging. I have a big sister. I have a big sister.
Yes. You have a big god and a big sister. Yes.
Exactly. No, it's great. I mean, I like the way you threw my memory, you know, out there. And yeah, I can reflect in all the work that we have jointly in different ways, yeah, collaborated, yeah, and done over the years. And It's a lot. And perhaps, probably, let's focus a bit more on the BAFTA Awards, because you're the founder. And when we talk about BAFTA, we're talking an event whereby we have seen the most renowned people around the world coming there. We're talking about the Michael Jackson's family, if I remember well. And we're talking about in the UK, Sir Trevor MacDonald. Lenny Henry, the comedian. Let me stop there.
So, you know,
so let's go back to the yeah, basics. What motivated you, sister? What made you think of, I'm going to find BAFTA Awards?
Right. It's interesting because, I mean, you will understand, because I started with the Mr. and Miss East Africa UK. At the time, I was a full-time mother, you know, to my son. And I wanted to do something, not just a beauty pageant, but Mr. and Miss East Africa UK. I wanted to have a reason and a purpose. And the purpose was to support children that lived on the street, in especially in Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania, where we did our Feed the Street Children drive. But at the same time, I used the pageant to encourage young East Africans in the UK to become entrepreneurs. And so in the process of doing the pageant, as you always know, sponsorship was very difficult to come by. So at the time, it's my husband and I that funded the pageant. And so things like, you know, like having an MC or host of the show, I had to beg and plead some people in the community, you know, people like Eddie Caddy, DJ Abranti, all of these, you know, they supported me for free. People like Kojo, you know, and then the, obviously as a beauty pageant, you need a choreographer, you need somebody to train the queens and the princesses. And so I had this guy called Sahara, and I also had a guy from the Caribbean called Matthew. So they both supported me as well for free. Then I had DJs supporting me, DJ Dubwise, you know, the Kenyan DJ Dubwise supported me a lot for free. You know, we had entertainers, artists supporting. And I remember one time Ali Kiba as well supported us, you know. But I thought all of this free help, this support that these people in the entertainment industry, people in, you know, in comedy, in music, in the fashion industry, you know, the designers that gave us clothes, gave my contestants clothes to wear for free, I, you know, never paid, because they knew that I was doing something for a good cause. But I thought, how do I give back to these people that are giving me free as well? And at that time, I remember there were no award ceremonies for us, you know, Black people in the UK, in the entertainment, in the film, the fashion, you know, in the arts. Yes, some people would argue there was Screen Nation, but Screen Nation was only focusing on the mainstream, as in only if you're on TV, if you're on BBC or ITV, you know. But what about the rest of the people that are not on mainstream? Who was praising them? Who was honoring them? Who was, you know? I thought, you know, what can I do for all these people doing amazing, all these? And remember, half the time, people wanted to give up because it was difficult back then to be in the industry as an African and Caribbean. Number one, you're not getting praised. You're not being awarded. You're not being honored. And number two, the industry wasn't that lucrative. So I wanted something to bring up the industry. You know, I wanted something to praise, an award ceremony to praise people in the industry, but also to bring, to increase the market in that industry. And so, so no, right in the middle of doing the Mr. and Miss East Africa UK, I thought, oh, okay, I have to give back to our people. But then my fascination also was, in this first award, I need to honor somebody incredible, a legend of the legends of the legends. And I remember wanting to honor Michael Jackson. For me, Michael Jackson was going to be our first huge honor, you know. And I remember the time he was touring for This Is It, his final concert, the This Is It concert. And to be honest with you, I already planned that I was going to organize BAFTA in 2010. So obviously Michael Jackson was doing his tour for his press conference. He had come to London, was doing his press conference for the This Is It concert. And that's where I got, I thought, you know what? After he's done this concert, okay, so now in 2010, I'm going to do the first BAFTA and he's going to be the one receiving the Legend Award, one of the biggest legends. Like, he's the legend, not even one of the biggest, he's the biggest, you know. But something happened, June 2009. Unfortunately, Michael Jackson died. We lost him. And at that point, I thought, wow. So I planned to do BAFTA in 2010. And the guy behind my motivation, the one I was going to give BAFTA first, just died in 2009. So why am I even waiting for 2010 to do BAFTA? Why am I even waiting? So Michael Jackson, I remember, died in June 25th, 2009. I'll never forget that. And on that same day, I decided I'm giving back to BAFTA. And 3 months down the line, who organizes a first award ceremony in 3 months? That's June, July, August, September, October. We did the first BAFTA at Hilton Metropole. You can imagine the magnitude, with just over 1,000 people in attendance, the first BAFTA. And so that was the birth of the Black Entertainment Film, Fashion, TV and Entertainment Arts Awards. And I remember at that time we did a press conference to announce it. We had the likes of the activist Lee Jasper. We had the founder of the first Black ethnic television in UK and Europe, Ben TV, Dr. Alistair Soyode. We had various high profile, and you were there as well, you know, obviously working for the BBC, you were there, you came to support. It was a press conference that we did at the Hilton, and that was us announcing BAFTA, and there was so much excitement around it. So I then carved the nomination categories. So then we had the entertainment category, which covered the comedy, it covered music, it covered DJs, it covered songwriters, it covered record labels, it covered music videos, music video directors, it covered producers. So with the BAFTA, it was about, and it is still about, honoring people who work behind the scenes and people who work at the front of the camera. most award ceremonies, as you know, they honor people at the front. You know, the actors will be honored, the artists will be honored, and yet the producer won't be honored. The songwriter will not be honored. The DJ will not be honored. So we now give birth to this award ceremony that really was focusing on honoring a lot of people behind working behind the scenes to make sure the stars shine. But also the beauty about BAFTA was that, and is that, at BAFTA, everybody's a VIP. As you're aware, you've attended BAFTA, you know, when Trevor MacDonald was there, Lemmy Henry, all of those. But they were all going through the same red carpet. There was no different back door to bring the celebrity in.
Colorful radio.
Is everybody, whether you're a celebrity and not a celebrity, whether you're aspiring, whether you're a big star, you know, we treat everybody as a VIP. So hence, yeah, so the BAFTA was born. So we then had the, so it's Black Entertainment. People always wonder what is BAFTA stand for. So that's the Black Entertainment Film, Fashion, TV, and Arts Awards. So Black Entertainment Film, Fashion, TV, and Arts Awards. So that's BAFTA. Of course, later on, we added leadership, you know, category, because we have leaders in different sectors, in religious sectors, community leaders. We have political leaders, we have business leaders, education leaders. You know, we've added leadership to it. We've added philanthropy to it as well, because we have humanitarians in different sectors giving back. We've added influencers, content creators. But the original was that the entertainment was the music, was the comedy, was the DJs, was the, you know, and all of that. And then we have fashion. In fashion, we have the models, fashion designers, you know, catwalk trainers, and then we have film, different, you know, African film, Caribbean films, Nollywood films, British films, and then we have the television sector, and then we have the art sector, where, you know, we have the authors under the arts, we have visual artists under the arts, spoken word under the arts. And so it was this only place, and it still is, and nobody, I've still not seen any award ceremony that has done what I've done. And I remember that year we were listed on madnews.com. madnews.com is where they list things that are extraordinary, that are just like, they're crazy.
Yeah,
because we had the longest list of nominations, and we have the longest sector, like more diverse. And so we're still like that, and we added more. But remember, when we started BAFTA, it was because I decided to introduce BAFTA because I thought, as Black people, we were not honored as we should have been. We were not on that platform. We were not raised and praised. But with time, so many award ceremonies came after BAFTA. And in fact, I'm so proud to have mentored so many people as well to start their own award ceremonies. So now, as many years went by, I felt that there was no excuse to just do it for Black. We now then, a few years down the line, because now we Black people were not
inclusivity, because inclusivity is key. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, diverse and inclusive. We now said, okay, it's now diverse and inclusive. Now we have the Asians in there. Now we have the Europeans. We have everybody. Because let's be honest, what I found out, also what made me sometimes feel like, oh, maybe I'm discriminating, because a lot of times we had all the white photographers come to BAFTA, take pictures, you know, they were so embedded into it. They supported BAFTA. And I thought, wait. And
you were also equally important, isn't it?
In the photography category. Yeah, and I thought, why? So, because they're not Black, we can't nominate them in the photography category, and yet they're supporting us as well. Then I decided, no, we're now including everybody. It's still, yes, BAFTA, but it's inclusive. We're now including everybody because the market has opened. everybody's now celebrating everybody. Yes, you know, we can still complain sometimes at the Oscars and say, oh, Black people are not being nominated enough. And but to be honest, we've now come a long way.
But I'm very proud.
A lot has changed
so much.
A lot has changed. A lot of inclusion now. And so BAFTA could not also be left behind. I couldn't allow that for BAFTA to be left behind and just stay as the Black award ceremony. So no, we now became inclusive, Asian and white, everybody's in. And I am proud from where it started from. And people didn't really question that. Why was it just for Black? They understood. Not really.
They could see. You see, the dynamics are always very clear. You live them. You live them. You can experience them. You can see them. Like if you talk to me like today, you say, yeah, how is the landscape of the movie industry? I'm like, okay, long time ago, we knew Hollywood. But if you go to US today, right? Someone like Tyra Perry, his studios are in direct competition with Hollywood.
That's it. The dynamics have changed.
So they don't want any little tokenism. They don't want tokenism to be...
No.
They're running their show.
Exactly. We're all on the same platform. Remember, I run three film studios in London. And I saw the change from when I started running the first film studio. This is 15 years ago. 15 years ago, the production companies were predominantly white. They cast... the crew, you know, for a long time. But I must tell you that the past 5 years, all that has changed. You see on set now, the BBC will have a production. And do you know, now it's even 80% of them are Black.
Yeah.
Black and Asian on set.
Things have changed.
Things have changed. And so even us as an award ceremony that started just to praise the Black community, we also had to now move with times and be inclusive, especially for those that are supporting us, you know. We even have a diversity category for companies, big companies that support, you know, Black businesses. I see, you know, entities like HSBC, NatWest, you know, they support small Black businesses and all that. So we have a category for, you know, big institutions like that, you know.
That's brilliant.
Yes, I'm proud of the progress that we as a Black community have collectively made. I mean, you were there way before when, you know, I would call it the Black struggle, and you're still here now that we are inclusive. You know, I'm also really appreciative of, you know, people like yourselves, Julius, my brother. You know, you've never ever stopped supporting all my good causes, whether it's the Mr. and Mrs. Africa UK, whether it's the Diaspora Community Awards ceremony that I also have every now and again, whether it's the Pauline Long Show, whether it's the Pauline Long Entrepreneurship Foundation, my charities. You've always been there to support. So I must also take this time to say, thank you so much. Thank you.
No, appreciated. You do the hard work, but it's for me, it's easy to shout, you know, I'm very loud.
And so you have been shouting so well.
Club behind the scenes.
You know, there's times when I would go to bed and I wake up in the morning and I get text messages from Kenya. Yeah. They're like, oh, you are on the Nation newspaper. You're on the Standard newspaper. And all thanks to Julius Mbaluto, you know? So thank you so much. You made sure that what I was doing and what I'm doing here in the UK does not go in vain. You make sure that it does not go in vain. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Not a problem. As we finish the first part of the program, tell us about BAFTA 2024. And then after that, we go to Kenya, focus a bit more on Kenya with the latest current political state in Kenya.
Yes, indeed. BAFTA 2024 is quite exciting. We've just done the press and nomination launch in central London a couple of weeks ago. And so now we are about to release the official nominations categories. And then for the month of September, the whole month of September, we'll be going through the voting process. And the big event is on the 26th of October at the Lighthouse. Remember, the Lighthouse was our original venue where we used to do that many years ago, maybe over 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we did it there.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is our 16th BAFTA edition.
Amazing.
So since 2009, we have never failed to do it. Even during COVID, we tried to do smaller versions. Remember, there was a time we used to do BAFTA for 2 days. Day one, we would get 4,000 people. Day two, another 4,000 and a bit, you know?
Yeah.
It was overwhelming, but amazingly great. So we're back again with the big BAFTA. We're expecting 1,600 on the 26th of October at the Lighthouse. Obviously, there are some big, big names coming, which, okay, I want to keep it a secret for now. But, you know, just as I said, everybody at BAFTA is a VIP. We're not really rolling out red carpet for just big names. Everybody, we are excited to see everyone in the industry. We are excited to see the aspiring artists as well to come and mix with legends and champions. And so that's what BAFTA is about. Under one roof, everybody under one roof, just celebrating each other and also collaborating. You know, I can write a book on how many collaborations have been made via BAFTA. I'm so proud, absolutely phenomenal. If that's to be my legacy when I'm gone, Julius, then please, yeah, let them know that I am proud of what I achieved.
No,
and the
you've
many
done
people
well.
I brought together. Yes.
Tell you, you've done well. You've done well. Without a doubt, you've done well. And it's amazing to see the important role that, you know, BAFTA came to, or the fire that BAFTA ignited in this industry, that at the time tended to be very unwelcoming in a different way or the other.
I was having a conversation with Banner Boy's mom the other day, and I said to her that she must be celebrated for also, as you've just mentioned, that I ignited the fire in the industry through BAFTA. And I just mentioned to her as well, she must be celebrated for igniting the fire for the whole continent, the entertainment industry. Banner Boy is where he is because of the mother, the way that his mother has pushed for him. And so as a result of Banner Boy being where he is, a lot of doors have opened for African artists. But we have to get back to the basic, the root. Who is the root? The mother. And so I'm just going to mention here for the first time that we are going to honor Banner Boy's mother, Bosse. I call her Queen of Queens. We're going to honor her with the BAFTA Legend Award.
That would be great.
And I am mentioning here for the first time. She doesn't even know. But this is exclusive.
Yeah, no, that would be great. That would be great. It's worth all the honor. It's just amazing. No, I'm really happy for you. And yeah, keep doing the great work that you do through the BAFTA and other different platforms that you've held. So great, great. Away from BAFTA, we need to focus our attention in Kenya. And just to introduce ourselves to this, of course, we'll talk this a lot more. We saw the emergency of Gen Z's coming and giving a different meaning to protest and them scoring a lot of points, great wins, in a way,
yes,
transforming the political landscape, never the same way it was. But then we have seen the exit of the main oppositionist in Kenya, Raila Odinga, who was the former prime minister. He announced this week that he will no longer be very much active in local politics of Kenya because he's going to join the African Union. He's vying to be the chairman of Africa Union.
That's right.
So as we reckon, we just think, we want to think of what does all this mean? And his action, the very last time, that ended the Gen Z's protest. What does that mean for the future of Kenya?
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio.
Colorful
Radio.
So, Gen Z come with a very clear vision and focus. They targeted the Finance Bill 2024, which they knocked off. It was discontinued. It was a big win for them. They want the parliament to be parliamentarian, especially the cabinet secretaries who voted for the bill. Yes, actually the government, the executive, they wanted that to be dissolved. And it was. Gen Z's also wanted to reconstitution of the electoral body, IEBC, to be done. And we saw Ruto respond. We saw them telling the president to discontinue the offices of the first lady, the second lady, and the office of the prime cabinet secretary, you know, Musalia Mudavadi, and all these offices were discontinued. So it was like a win-win-win-win, which we saw. It was a protest with outcome, with results, unlike before. But then we see when they were thinking, okay, they're going to have a big win. Mr., you know, former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, who was a key opposition, they thought he was on their side. He crosses, he's now with the government. He gives, he contributes his men to work as cabinet secretaries to the government he lived his life opposing. So of course, that's where we are right now. And of course, the protest is not going, but I think they've gone back to drawing board. But what do you make of all these interesting changes, you know? People who are wearing shoes when they never used to wear shoes. They are eating the food they never used to eat. I don't know how to put it better.
You know, first of all, I'm a proud Kenyan. I'm very proud to be Kenyan, and I wouldn't want to be from any other country, to be honest. Well, apart from Nigeria, in my next life.
They claim ownership of you sometimes.
Yes, they claim ownership, and I'm fine with that. You know, that's my second home. However, what we have witnessed in Kenya in the past few weeks has been revolutionary, not just for us Kenyans, but you can see that other countries were peeping through and saying, one tiny Kenya can do this. What about us Nigerians? What about, you know, all of the other African countries, that, you know, even Ugandans, like, you know, how can Kenya do this? And the rest of us are watching. So what has happened in Kenya essentially is a shift of mindset. And I wouldn't call it a sudden shift of mindset of the Gen Zs. This has been brewing for a long time. Remember, the president comes from a different generation. Former prime minister comes from a different generation. And so are their children that come from a different generation and their children's children. So, you know, some of these children have found themselves in situations where Kenya, you know, where some of the atrocities that have been happening in Kenya, you know, like the election violence, the rigging, the corruptions, you know, they have found themselves in this situation since they were toddlers, since the conception, actually, from the tummy to when they became toddlers, to when they became teenagers, to now when they were in their 20s. Now they're in their 30s. Now they're in their 40s. Former prime minister has children in their 40s. So they're also looking at this and saying, no, we have to protect our own children. We have to protect our next generation. It doesn't matter if our father or our mothers were the main stakeholders. It doesn't matter if I was Uhuru's son or Uhuru's grandchild or whatever, but this is now about us collectively. And hence the reason why we saw Kenyans come together for the first time no tribe affiliation, no political affiliation, no gender affiliation. Everybody came out as Kenyans, and of course, spearheaded by the Gen Zs. And as you mentioned, demands were met, but not all demands. You know, it has to take a process. But the shocking demands that were met, for me, even discontinuing those high-profile offices, like the office of the first lady, a second, or whatever, how many? I didn't even know they add up to the third. Yeah?
Yeah, they add up to the third.
I did all of us, you know, just to squander Kenyans' money. So demands, of course, have been met as a result of Gen Z's speaking louder and louder every day. And I know that former President Honorable Raila Odinga, as we all know, he's a peaceful person. He's very peaceful. He's very forgiving. Now, instead of him seeing Kenya ban or conflicts here and there, he steps in. That's why he's an elder. And that's why, no wonder he's going for the chairmanship for the AU. He's an elder who knows that a country can only flourish with peace. It doesn't matter what side of the political divide you come from. Now, a lot of people might step in and say, you know what, he's betrayed the opposition. I don't see it as this is a betrayal.
Gen Z are calling him a sellout, a traitor.
Yeah. Gen Z's need to calm down. You know, not everything you have to fight, the physical fight. There are some things you have to just take it easy and have mediation and conversation that will lead to actions. And that this is what happened, remember, as well, with the handshake between Uhuru and Raila at the time. It was first conversation and then the action. And so that's what the Gen Zs, I know, they want everything done straight away, just oven baked, quick, out. And I am for them like that, but there are some things you can't do that as quick, especially Kenya does not belong to any individual person. Kenya does not belong to any individual entity or any corporation or institution. Kenya belongs to the normal you and I, you know? So I think that the move that former Prime Minister Honorable Raila Odinga and the current president have made, you know, Prime Minister,
you see, the critical thing is Dr. Pauline, the critical challenge is that we have come to know, of course, as Kenyans, that these politicians are never honest and are never the enemies they portray to the masses.
No, not right? Politicians.
And you see behind the scene, they may eat roasted goat together, but when it comes to politics, you see them people fighting over their standpoints, you know, and people die.
Tell me if this would happen in the UK. Yeah? The Conservatives lending some of their high-profile voices to Labour government to join the cabinet. No. Tell me, where would it happen? In the UK? Anywhere in the world? Nowhere in the world. Just our country, Kenya. So that's what's happened, yeah? Opposition has lent top guns, the top voices from the opposition has lent to the government to work with the government legitimately, which
but
means
they're
so not part of the government.
It's so unfair to the main cabinet secretaries from UDA, the ruling party, because now they say our president told us to oppose these guys, to call them names, and now they came in and we are out.
But what that's to say? That is to say, is for me, the president is admitting defeat. Yeah, he's admitted defeat. He's now stepped up and has admitted this defeat that, yes, my government cannot do this alone. My dear, please lend me your people. Lend me some of your people. You understand, eh?
Yeah.
You know? And that's not to call him a coward. That is a different... Why should we use the white man's template that was left for us? Yes, okay, they found a way, brought in another template. Let them bring that template. If it's going to work for Kenyans, then so be it. I am for what's going
but
to work.
But when you look at it,
Kenya
you look
does
at
not
it,
belong for one person.
When you look at
person.
It from a malicious point,
yes,
which some people have, they are saying that, and actually President Ruto himself, he came out saying that, you're all calling me Zakayo. You are telling me to come down the tree. So this is exactly what he said. He has given the members of ODM party, those who joined his government from the opposition party, ODM, he has kept them in the ministry that were
He's given
that
them
were
government
failing Kenyans. And you know what he said? What he said was, I don't want to be the only one called Sakayo.
Colorful radio.
But what he should have said is Kenya doesn't belong to me. It belongs to everyone. And this is what, this is essentially, I would honestly, I'm giving him kudos for that, for what he has done. He has stepped back and seen this is not about an individual. This is not about him. You are nearly 16 million people are behind you, you know, hopeful, hoping that, you know what, there will be health equity in this country. Hopeful that there will be, unemployment will be lowered. Hopeful that, you know, that people can have, if not two square meals, three square meals, then even one or two square meals, you know, because Kenya got to a point where some people couldn't even afford one square meal.
So really, the cost of living was extremely high.
Yes, anything that can mend the situation so that the country does not burn, so that you can also cool people down, because the anger in everyone's home, now it was anger in every kiosk, every home, every hospital, every school, the anger was spreading everywhere like wildfire. So for me, this step that he has taken, of course, consulting different avenues. He didn't just wake up and decide on all this. He didn't just use his spin doctors. He had to consult different sectors, you know, the young, the old, the middle-aged. And so, you know, you cannot please everyone as a leader. So now we've come to a point where, okay, opposition are also now in government. Okay, now let's do it together. Let's see how we can now save this country together. Let me not just be the only one taking the blame. Eh? Now I've opened the door. Come, show me. Come, let's work together. And I think it takes a strong leader to do that. Would Museveni do that?
No. It's just because of Kenya. You know, the culture of Kenya is different from Uganda.
No, tell me if Museveni would do that.
Yeah, but we don't compare ourselves with the worst examples like Museveni.
Tell me any of... Would Kagame do that? Would Kagame open the door to opposition? No, tell me anywhere. Tell me anywhere.
Yeah, I cannot.
Who would do that?
This is the thing. I cannot, and I'll never give credit to Ruto for opening that. Look, were it not Gen Z's protests, which were relentless, he wouldn't have done that. So,
but he did not do that because he was willing to. We've seen it done everywhere. You know, Mugabe used to do it. You know, he would have still used his machinery to silence the Gen Zs. He would have decided to do that.
He used, but a lot of them were killed, and there are still some of them abducted are still missing.
Yeah,
that's something we cannot forget.
That's something we cannot forget. Obviously, that's all very political, but let me tell you, was this guy cornered? What did he did people put a gun on his head and say, look, you have to do this or else?
Some critics have said that were it not for the AU chairmanship Raila was going for, he would have been happy to see Ruto stand down, resign. He would have been happy to, because that would be good for him as a key oppositionist. That's all he was seeking for, telling the country.
But we know
the government opened the server, all these things which were never done. He would have been happy. But you know, when it comes to AU chairmanship, it is the presidents who vote. So if, for example, we have a country like Kenya where the government has gone home and election for AU chairmanship is coming, there's no mechanism to support Raila. So as some critics have said, he just took a selfish decision to support Ruto.
I'm not sure we would go down that route, because We know that over the couple of years, in fact, since the last general elections, we know that Honorable Raila somehow lost his zeal and his, that power that he always had. He didn't want to fight anymore, because I think that he felt that he was fighting for a lost cause. So he wanted to go and fight. Sometimes if you're not accepted at home, then you'll be accepted abroad.
Yeah.
So he wanted to go and fight for the bigger, the wider, what should we call it? The wider cause for the whole continent. You know, he no longer doesn't want to be squashed where he's not even invited. How many times are they going to steal your votes before you know that you are somebody? You're phenomenal. You've been born to do this, but the doors are shut. But somewhere else is probably crying for you. And so this is what Raila has done. Raila has decided Kenya is too small for him. Quite honestly, that's what Raila has decided. So whether or not Ruto is going to support his chairmanship or not, Raila is still going to have 53 countries will support him, even if Kenya doesn't. Zambia has already registered support. Malawi has registered support. All the other countries are registering support for his chairmanship for the AU. Yeah? So I think that as an elder, Ruto sees him also as an elder, you know, and would listen to him. And I'm sure Raila did not threaten Ruto that if you don't do this, then I won't do this. I think that it's Ruto that went to Raila and said, look, statesman, our leader, this is where Kenya is at. Please, how can you support me take Kenya to the next level? I'm sure it's Ruto that went kneeling down to Raila, not the other way. No way. Raila feels right now he's too big for Kenya.
Yeah.
He's too big for our Kenya. He's too big for our small Kenya. This guy is going for 54 countries. So Ruto has to just come and knock on his door, and this is what's happening. It's not even that relationship they had before, you know, with the Uhuru, Ruto and Raila. This one is different. This one, you can see that Ruto is the one kneeling down for this guy. Please.
He's the same guy help who me. Used to tell Raila there will never be Nusu Mukate coalition government.
I wouldn't even be surprised that he offered that and Raila said, no, we can't go there, not this time. I'm too focused on the continent at the moment. I can only now assist you this way. Let me give you my leaders. Let them come and, you know, these are the leaders. And I'm sure even Raila must have told him, these are the leaders that should have been elected in this country. But unfortunately, you rigged. I won't be surprised if he was open and used such languages.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway.
Really, Julius, tell me, under what term did Ruto finally now step down and say, Joho is now going to be in my cabinet?
Yes, the same Joho who used to say he cannot stand next to Ruto, right? Anyway, they are very interesting times, you know. I think I can't wait to see how the political alignment will be come 2027.
This is what people are talking about.
It will be something very strange that Kenya has never seen.
Kenya 2027. It's going to change because there are a lot of people that are going to vie for presidency, including myself. It's no longer going to be stakeholders, you know, the dynasties as usual. Never. This is going to be the change that not just Kenya, but they encourage every day, the 44-year-old. And I'm encouraged. And you know what? Yeah. If there are 10 that want to become presidents as well in Kenya in 2027, come, let's go. I'm supporting.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to be paper candidates, but guess what? That is going to give morale to the rest of Kenyans to know that Kenya does not belong to the small minority.
Yeah.
You know? Anybody that's capable to lead can lead. And anybody that's willing to lead as a servant should be the leader of that country.
Yeah, let's see how it's gonna be. And yeah, they're interesting times for Kenya. And the good thing is that what I've loved, and I love, I'm always happy to say I'm Kenyan, it's just the way Kenyans can really even fight ideologically. And when they sense danger, they just take a back step. They say, we are not going down to the pit of hell.
Right.
They always do that. They always have that mechanism as a country. And I think it's really good, because I've seen countries like, well, I'll give you many examples. Look at Sudan. Yeah, they started with a revolution, right? And right. Where are they today now? Is split between the country's military arms, fighting each other. So it's good for a country to know when it is the time to step back and live to fight another day. So that's one thing I like about Kenya. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Of course, because
they know when to take a step back.
They know when to take a step back. Yeah.
But also we have leaders that focus and listen. And the past few weeks, we have seen that they are ready to listen.
Yeah.
And they are willing to focus.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, what Kenyans have done is they've come together as one voice, no gender separation, no political affiliation, no religion affiliation, no, oh, this is my godfather, this is my this is my that. No, 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 no. Kenyans have come as one voice. Exactly. One voice. Exactly. And that's the only way you can defeat the enemy.
Yeah, indeed. Unity is strength. So, yes, as we say, unity is strength. Let's all stand united as a continent of Africa and also wherever we are. So, I thank you very much for your time. And, of course, we're going to carry on with these conversations at a later date. So we'll end it there for today. Our listeners, don't go away. Stay tuned for more programs coming to you. From
Colorful Radio.
Baby, I don't let on lie. baby, and lole, baby, and toyaka.
I say my name now, Mohammed. Music is my logo.
I don't need that.
When you see me for your postcode, tell me my logo.
When you hear me say logo, you know we say banger.
Them man I breathe on the low, we got heat on the low. Them man I rip on the low, and they think we don't know. No. Shout to my G's on the low, and we category on the low. Shout LGP on the low, man up on the wings, soon to throw the, yeah, yeah. Bad man, no fear bad man cannot snitch, boy. My G take no teacher, straight clap in the clips, boy. Give you the baddest, give you the flow. When you hear me say logo, you already know. Bad man, me a trendsetter, bad man, me not this, we know. Yeah, damn, me not my circle, only paintings I need. Your girlfriend, she want levels, she can jump on the D.
Because bad man a bad man, fool is a fool. Can't let a gutter boy take my food. Bad man a bad man, fool is a fool. Can't let a gutter boy take my food.
Them man a breathe on the low, we got heat on the low. Them man a rip on the low, and they think we don't know. No.
Shout to my G's on the low, and we get category on the low. Shout LGP on the low. Man up on the wings, soon to throw the, yeah, yeah.
Bad man a go getter, bad man a tall shotter, boy. Me no look who to face, be less say you the craze, boy. But good vibes all I need, yeah, the wipe on that team, yeah, yeah.
Bad man me a trendsetter, bad man me not this, we know.
Yeah, damn me not my circle, only paintings I need. Your girlfriend, she want levels, she can jump on the D.
Because bad man a bad man, fool is a fool. Can't let a gutter boy take my food. Bad man a bad man, fool is a fool. Can't let a gutter boy take my food.
Them man a creep on the low, we got heat on the low. Them man a rip on the low.